This is a People First Radio podcast.
A Vancouver lawyer has concerns that changes to residential tenancy regulation in BC could erode the dignity of people living in supportive housing. The province is amending residential tenancy rules to exempt supportive housing units from sections of the Residential Tenancy Act that prohibit blanket guest policies and wellness checks. Danielle Sabelli is a lawyer with the Community Legal Assistance Society. She says that current rules already allow landlords to restrict guests if there is a reasonable basis to do so, and she also says that the changes risk undermining the rights, dignity, and autonomy of vulnerable tenants. She joined me to share more.
My name is Danielle Sabelli, and I'm a lawyer with the Community Legal Assistance Society.
And can you help me understand exactly what has changed from a legal perspective when it comes to regulation around the Residential Tenancy Act in BC?
Absolutely. So currently, supportive housing is covered by the Residential Tenancy Act, which means tenants who live in supportive housing are entitled to all of the rights under the Residential Tenancy Act. Their landlords are expected to comply with the obligations under the Residential Tenancy Act. There are some exempted living accommodations, such as transitional housing, but supportive housing has never been exempted from the Residential Tenancy Act. Housing providers were always required to apply the Residential Tenancy Act. I'll refer to it as the RTA moving forward because it's a bit of a mouthful. So what's happened now is government has introduced a regulation that amends the RTA, which essentially removes some of those rights tenants who live in supportive housing would have under the RTA. And that becomes effective February 28th. So essentially, its functions to disentitle tenants from rights that they had as tenants living in supportive housing. And specifically, those rights that they no longer will get to enjoy include the ability to bring in guests without restriction. The RTA does prevent landlords from introducing any guest restrictions without a reasonable basis. They always could restrict guests, but it always had to be a reasonable basis. There had to be a reason. You couldn't just decide everybody living in this building, we're going to institute this blanket policy preventing people from being able to come in after 8 p.m. or requiring that guests have government-issued ID. So those blanket policies would have been unlawful. So folks would have been able to enjoy being able to bring guests as they please. Now, that provision that restricted landlords from being able to impose any kind of guest restriction without a reasonable basis is no longer applicable. So now landlords can restrict guests however they choose. And there's no opportunity to challenge those policies under the RTA as it will be amended once these amendments come into force. So that's one type of right that now has been sort of taken away from tenants who live in supportive housing. Now, I do want to be very clear that this was happening. So a lot of supportive housing providers were imposing these restrictive guest bans on everybody who lived in the building, these blanket policies, but it was always unlawful. It was always not something they could do. So tenants in buildings where there would have been maybe these guest restrictions that were blanket guest restrictions that apply to everybody would have had the ability to go to the residential tenancy branch and argue that those restrictions are not compliant with the Residential Tenancy Act because the landlord had imposed it without providing a reasonable basis. And we have some case law that confirms that's an unlawful thing to do, is to just say you're all going to be subjected to this policy that guest bans and that restricts or bans guests in this way. Now that opportunity isn't there. That opportunity is gone. So that's one change. Another change is under the RTA, they have a reasonable expectation of privacy. They're entitled to privacy. And part of that includes a limit to when the landlord can enter a tenant's unit. So So under the RTA, a landlord has to provide 24-hour written notice before they enter a unit, and they have to provide the reason for entering the unit. Now, once these amendments come into force, that landlords will be exempted from that particular provision. So essentially, a landlord can come into a tenant's unit at any point. They don't have to give 24 hours written notice. They can just walk in and enter the unit. And again, a tenant would not have any recourse if that happened. Under the RTA, the recourse would be you can apply to the Residential Tenancy Act. You can ask for remedies like, I want compensation because my right to quiet enjoyment has been breached. My landlord just entered my unit without giving me any notice. My privacy was violated. Or you can ask for a remedy that restricts the landlord from being able to come in. You can even ask to change the locks if that continues to happen. Now tenants living in supportive housing won't be able to do that. So that's another right that's been removed from tenants living in supportive housing. And the third right, which is one that has not been talked about by government, that was not part of their public release of information announcing these changes, is the right to quiet enjoyment provisions. So right now, all tenants have a right to quiet enjoyment. And so that includes reasonable expectation of privacy. That includes being free from unreasonable disturbances. So if a tenant has a neighbor that's really loud or disruptive, they could always apply to the residential tenancy branch and ask for compensation because they're not able to enjoy their unit because there's a disturbance. That is something tenants can no longer do now as well. So tenants, and again, tenants living in supportive housing. So tenants in supportive housing, if they're not able to enjoy their unit because there's noise, even noise that results from repairs that the landlord is undertaking, those are the kinds of things that a tenant can apply to the residential tenancy branch to get compensation for. The idea is you're not enjoying your unit fully, so you should be compensated for not being able to enjoy your unit. That's also been taken away.
These changes have been framed as a way to improve safety and potentially save lives for people living in supportive housing. There were references in the announcement to an incident where someone was found dead in their room after several days, and a review into supportive housing sites in Maple Ridge provided recommendations around how to avoid that sort of thing after it was reported that it had happened multiple times. Do you not feel that these changes, as described, will be a net benefit in terms of saving people's lives?
Well, I'll start by just kind of noting that what we didn't see in the government announcement or any of the press around these changes are the voices of tenants who live in supportive housing. It's all coming from the provider. It's all coming from government saying these are necessary for safety. But we're not actually hearing about the impact it's going to have on folks living in supportive housing. We're not hearing about the lived experience of people who live in supportive housing or have past experiences living in supportive housing. It's all coming from the provider. And the reason why that's concerning is because there are least restrictive measures, I think, that can be put into place or that the landlords have access to that don't require the complete removal of pretty important rights. So I'll give you a couple examples. So as I mentioned, the right to be able to have guests. Yes, government has been, and I know housing providers see that guest bans are necessary for the safety of buildings and for the safety of tenants living in those buildings. And I do want to emphasize safety, of course, is the utmost importance, but safety needs to be balanced with human dignity. And if these things can be accomplished by other means that don't result in the complete restriction of rights, then that should be explored. I think there are more nuanced responses or more ways to still ensure tenant safety without completely removing the rights of people. You know, what does removing the right to quiet enjoyment have to do with safety? Now, not being able to go get compensation if you're not enjoying your unit fully, how is that a safety measure? But more specifically, yes, I know that, you know, a lot of housing providers will say, well, the guest restrictions are necessary for safety because sometimes folks might bring in guests that are causing problems throughout the building. Or I know the reason for removing the reason for exempting supportive housing providers from those privacy provisions and the restrictions on a landlord's ability to enter so they can conduct wellness checks, which would allow them to basically, a landlord, enter into a tenant's unit to prevent an overdose or to prevent some other harm. The thing is, under the RTA, landlords have the tools they need to do that. So earlier I was talking about how the provisions about guests specifically state that you know, you can't ban guests unless you have a reasonable basis to do so. Well, that means you can. A landlord can. They just have to have a reasonable basis. And that reasonable basis will depend on if there was an incident. So if there's a tenant who has a guest that's coming into the building, that's been a problem for other tenants, that's a safety risk, that's been harassing other tenants, the landlord can actually impose a restriction on that particular tenant or ban that particular guest. Where it becomes a problem is that it starts from the assumption that every tenant living here is going to have the potential to bring in a guest who may be disruptive. So rather than deal with the issue as they arise, we'll prevent them completely and take away tenants' rights from being able to bring in guests. The other example, the wellness check. I've heard from folks who appreciate the wellness check and actually do want to be able to participate in a wellness check and are okay with the landlord coming in to check on them. But I've also heard other tenants saying they don't want that and they feel that's a breach of privacy. They don't want the landlord to just be able to come into their unit. I know for some folks, their experiences involve landlords coming into the unit saying they're coming in for a wellness check, but what they're really doing is gathering evidence against that tenant so they can evict them. So on top of just the very obvious breach of privacy. So again, this is a situation where if somebody is absolutely interested in having a wellness check and can benefit from that, that's something that they can opt into. That's something that they can request. That's something they can make the choice to participate in versus being told this is what's going to happen. So it's about choice. It's about autonomy and not being able to do things that you might want to do or not have to do things that you don't want to do without giving the choice of whether or not you can do those things. And that's where the dignity piece comes into play, because now a landlord can walk into anybody's unit and say, I'm doing it for a wellness check, but that person may not need or want a wellness check. You know, it's not that there are no individual assessments or considerations involved in these types of policies.
You're listening to People First Radio. My guest is Danielle Sabelli, a lawyer with the Community Legal Assistance Society in Vancouver. We're discussing changes to residential tenancy regulation in British Columbia that would exempt supportive housing providers from the sections of the Residential Tenancy Act that prohibit guest policies and wellness checks. So the rules we've been talking about today, as they're written now before the changes come into effect, have these things come up in cases that your organization deals with?
Absolutely. So guest restrictions is one that has come up very, very often. We've seen landlords imposing all sorts of guest restrictions. I'd say one of the most egregious guest restrictions I've ever come across has been a building that banned anyone under the age of 18. So they had their reasons for that, but the effect was people couldn't have family members come visit. They couldn't have their children come visit. They couldn't have anyone under the age of 18 at all enter the building. And that was imposed on everyone in the building. And so I would say that the guest restrictions is very common in terms of cases. I mentioned earlier, there's this pretty major case that happened quite a few years ago now where a tenant did challenge the guest restriction, the guest policy that a supportive housing provider imposed on all the tenants, and was successful, which meant that now, well, not anymore, but prior to these amendments, there was case law that came from the courts that basically said, landlords, you cannot impose a blanket restriction on guests. And there are, you know, you do see some language by some judges where we have these cases involving supportive housing providers that want to impose either blanket policies or they make arguments about needing to be able to do certain things that other landlords shouldn't have to do because of the demographic in the building. And we have some language in the case law that does say that approach is discriminatory. That, you know, saying we have to do this because of the population that lives in this building, therefore we think we can just go ahead and not follow the law is discriminatory. And so we have these cases that say, no, you can't impose a blanket wide guest policy on all of the tenants. That's unlawful. But even though we had that case that said that practice was unlawful, we know that there are still plenty of supportive housing providers that continue to do that. Even the housing provider that was involved in that particular case publicly said, yeah, we're aware of the case and how the case said it's unlawful to impose these blanket building-wide guest restrictions, but we're going to continue to do it. And so that's why we know that these laws, we know that landlord supportive housing providers have always been doing this. They've been imposing the guest restrictions, but now there's just no recourse. There's no recourse for a tenant to challenge that the way that tenant I just mentioned challenged and got a successful decision saying blanket building-wide guest restriction policies are unlawful. That's not going to be something a person can do anymore with respect to these particular exempted provisions of the RTA.
Your organization used the phrase the carceral continuum in a press release about these changes. I'm wondering if you could explain that a little bit for me.
Yeah, I will absolutely say it's not. That's language that you're seeing being used more and more often in terms of housing rights and the lived experiences of people who are living in nonprofit housing. Basically, we hear from a lot of folks that the conditions feel like a prison. There's a lot of social control. There's a lot of, again, treating folks without any dignity, not respecting personal choice and autonomy. And so that is something that, again, not just our organization, it's a term, it's a phrase used by tenant advocates and advocates of people with lived experience living in nonprofit housing that describe the experience as prison-like, being controlled, having behavior controlled, not being told what you can and cannot do in your own home. So what we see and what we hear from tenants who are describing their experiences, and again, this is a term that's not just exclusive to our organization. It's one that we've certainly accepted and adopted and has been used for a while by other folks, other activists, other tenant advocates, tenants, that essentially just describes that type of nonprofit government-run housing as very much about being controlled and having their behaviors and choices dictated.
And I feel obliged to say, you know, in the same way you would say that you wouldn't want to use the same brush to paint every tenant who lives in supportive housing, that there is likewise a wide array of different supportive housing providers and a different array of, you know, buildings and staff situations and setups and across the province of BC. You also describe these changes as contributing to the erosion of dignity of tenants in supportive housing. I guess that goes along the same lines?
Yeah, the erosion of dignity. You know, there's when people don't have much choice in terms of affordable housing options, are left with the only choice of having to either decide to be unhoused or to move into a building run by a nonprofit housing provider, and not having the same rights as other tenants, that can be very undignified. You know, only because I'm in this position am I told I am undeserving of the same rights as other tenants, and that goes to very fundamental rights to privacy, being able to, again, make choices about whether or not they're okay with the landlord coming in the name of safety, just not being given choice and not being treated the same way as other tenants are being treated. And the what we hear from a lot of folks who live in the nonprofit housing world, that's how experiences have been described as, you know, where's my dignity? This is my home. I should have, housing has been recognized by the federal government to be a right. Now there's recognition of it, but we're seeing more progression towards that. And we're seeing an understanding of how essential not just housing is, but adequate, culturally safe housing is for people. Part of that includes being provided with rights. And we can hope that, you know, there are nonprofit housing providers that are providing that. But when the law leaves that gap, then that protection goes away. We can't just rely on the good faith of housing providers that they're going to do what's right and they are going to offer housing that feels dignified to folks.
So you've mentioned today, and you wrote in the press release that you're arguing for what you would call a more targeted and nuanced approach to addressing some of the safety concerns that the law changes have been presented as addressing. What would that look like?
So that might look like, as you know, as I mentioned, the RTA allows landlords to do what they say they need to do to ensure safety in their buildings, just focused on issues as they arise, rather than this preemptive approach of just, we're going to take away rights from everybody because we think that's necessary to ensure everyone's safety. And I don't think that it's that simple. I think there are definitely other ways to do that, including resourcing, giving the nonprofit housing providers more resources so they can address specific issues as they arise in the building. Better education, just utilizing what is available to landlords under the RTA as it is without removing the rights of people. And I don't know that there was any exploration of those other types of approaches that could have been explored. Or you could have, you know, there might be people, absolutely. I'm again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm saying nobody living in supportive housing thinks these are good or would benefit from those measures. Absolutely, I'm sure there are. But again, those folks who want that should be able to make that choice. And those who do not should be able to make that choice as well. So if somebody felt safer in a building that had banned guests or was very restrictive in who can and cannot come in, can absolutely understand and appreciate there are reasons why someone would want to live in that type of building, then there can be buildings designated as such. And so if a person wants to live in a building where there are completely, guest bans and people are restricted from being able to, they can choose to live in that building as opposed to having no choices. And the only choices available is a building where that's just going to be imposed on them. So I think there could have been more, probably more time spent on understanding the needs of tenants. I think there was time spent understanding the needs of the housing providers. And I don't think that there was any real consultation or meaningful consultation about the needs of tenants as a starting point, just to understand how those needs of both landlords and tenants could be met in a way that doesn't result in the complete exemption and removal and disentitlement of rights of tenants who are already in a situation that isn't well protected. You know, I'm talking about the RTA, but even the RTA is very limited in its protections as it is in terms of what types of protection and security of tenure tenants should actually have. Now we're taking away even more of that. And the entire purpose of the RTA is to protect tenants. That is absolutely confirmed by the courts. The purpose is to protect tenants. So removing rights is not going to accomplish that. So again, I just think that there could have been more consultation, more thought put into how we can still achieve safety here without removing tenants' rights. And I think, again, the RTA allowed there, it didn't need any changing as far as the law goes, because the law did allow landlords to do what they needed to do to ensure that, you know, buildings aren't feeling unsafe to people because of certain guests, or people feeling unsafe because they no one's checking on them if they've used. And the other problematic thing too, just to highlight, is the guest restrictions. What we've heard, especially during the pandemic, because there were a lot of supportive housing providers and nonprofit housing providers that were imposing complete outright guest bans, is that if you can't bring in guests, or you have restrictions on your guests, then you might not be able to use safely if you can't bring a buddy or a friend in your home with you, because there's a guest restriction. So they actually counter one another in some respects as well, these exemptions. So
Danielle Sibeli is a lawyer with the Community Legal Assistance Society in Vancouver.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.